Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. My name is Lisa Woodruff, and I'm a professional organizer and blogger in Cincinnati, Ohio. I want to help you get your home organized and help you organize life stages and unexpected events. So sit back, relax, and let's get organized. Welcome to Organizing Life Stages and Unexpected Events. In the last episode, I talked to you all about how we finally got those two little blessings through adoption and how my transition from being a work-at-home mom with no children or work-at-home woman with no children to a mother of two really changed my life and how there was a big adjustment period and that affected my organization and really everything. And that's to be expected, that everyone goes through that adjustment when they become a mother. And sometimes it happens more when you have your first, sometimes more with your second, but somewhere along the line, you don't have it all together and then you get it all back together again and you kind of find your own groove. So the unexpected event that happened for us when our kids were little and still continues today would be all of the various medical needs that our children have. So when we adopted our very first little baby boy, he was born prematurely and we got him when he was 5 days old. And he was so stinking cute and so stinking tiny. I mean, he was the tiniest little thing. Like even when he was hungry, he had like this little bird noise. You know how it is when your kids are little. And we just watched every single thing that this child did for like 2 days. And then we were so exhausted, we didn't know what to do because not only did he not eat a lot, he also cried a lot and he was very colicky. And so my husband would take the baby from like 8 o'clock until midnight, maybe one, I don't know, the man's a saint. And I would go to bed at 8 o'clock at night and then I would get up at two and feed Joey at two and four and six and eight and 10. And he ate every 2 hours, but he didn't eat very much. Like we only made like 2 or 4 ounces in that little bottle. And he would only eat like 1 or 2 ounces and then he would cry and then he would spit up constantly. Like we went through 24 burp cloths a day and 12 bottles and we were constantly washing and drying bottles and washing and drying clothing. And so the doctor said that we should try a new formula. So he said that he might end up on a formula called Alumetin, which we dubbed liquid gold because it was like $25 a day for this formula. That was crazy. So we decided to try soy first. So we went home from the doctor's appointment and I made up the soy bottles. And by the third bottle, it was 9 o'clock at night. And I was like, I have to call the doctor. This is crazy. I mean, he was just miserable. So I called the doctor on call and I said, what is the name of the formula we have to buy? What do we have to go buy? And I went straight out to the store and bought Alumetin, which at the time in 2000 was only available in liquid form, thus why we called it liquid gold. So when Joey was 4 months old, we started trying cereal because I had heard if you give babies cereal that they sleep longer and, you know, it might help him with this colic and all that. And we had him on this little baby Zantac stuff or something like that that was supposed to be for his acid reflux, which did help a little bit. And so I kept giving him rice cereal to start. And I would swear he was wheezing. And I grew up with asthma. That was the thing that I grew up with. And it was so bad that in September and March, every single year, without fail, I would get so sick that we'd have to go to the ER in the middle of the night and get a shot of epinephrine. And my mom would even at one point took me into the doctor on the day when she knew we would end up in the ER that night. And she'd say, look, she's almost there. Just give her the shot now so we don't have to be at the hospital in the middle of the night. And I would be throwing up in the car on the way to the hospital because apparently when your asthma gets really bad, you throw up. That's one of your body's reactions until you can get that shot of epinephrine, which is adrenaline, which opens up your bronchial tubes again. And the doctor said they couldn't give me the shot early because it would actually cause a heart attack if you didn't actually need it yet. So I understood asthma. I understood how serious it was. Yes, I was probably a panicked mom, but every time I fed him rice cereal, I noticed this little rattly wheeze. So I took him into the doctor one day and of course they couldn't hear the wheeze. And so I felt even more crazy than I am. And maybe I'm making all this up in my head. And this is a constant thing that even this week I have struggled with. And my kids are now 14 and 13. I constantly second guess my mother intuition and constantly think maybe it's all in my head. Maybe there really isn't an issue here at all. I'm just being paranoid. So I switched him to like a barley or an oatmeal formula, and he did just fine with that. But anytime I gave him rice formula, he seemed like he had this rattly wheeze to me. So I just stuck away from rice, which was weird because rice doesn't have any allergy whatsoever, at least as far as I've ever been able to tell. So there were a couple other times in that first year of life where I really thought he was wheezing, and I took him in to the doctor, and once I even took him down to Children's during the day to the ER because the doctor sent me down there. And when he got there, he wasn't wheezing. So when he was 11 and a half months old, it was his very first Christmas, and we were up at home. I grew up in the Akron-Cleveland area, and I had asthma, and I have a couple cousins who had severe asthma, and I have an aunt who is a nurse. And so we had Joey at the family event, and he was obviously wheezing. I mean, he was obviously sick. He was very sick, and he was wheezing. But I had been told so many times that he wasn't wheezing that I wasn't going to, like, take him to an out-of-network doctor at Christmas time. It was Christmas Eve. And so my nurse aunt and my aunt who had children with asthma, you know, they came up with all the remedies that we should do, like the Vicks on their chest. And we created like this tent that the baby was in with the humidifier and all these things. And we were just going to ride it out. And he cried all night, but it was this whimpery cry. And by 4 a.m., I couldn't handle it anymore. And I swooped him up and I said to my husband, I said, I'm taking him to Children's Hospital in Akron, which I grew up in Akron. So I knew all the doctors there and I knew it was like going home with them. And I was like, we'll just figure it out later how much it's going to cost. You don't have to come if you don't want to. Well, of course he came. So at 4 a.m., we're at the ER with this little baby who was in respiratory distress. His oxygen level was way down. They had to give him two breathing treatments to get him breathing. He had a double ear infection. He was so, so sick. And when I think back on that night, I'm just nauseous because this is how children die of asthma, is that they don't get treated and they cry and cry and cry, and then they just give up and they stop breathing. And we were so close to that point. And I didn't really realize it because I had kind of learned to suppress this gut feeling I had that this kid had asthma, but I had been wrong so many times. Like, it hadn't been able to be diagnosed by the medical professional so many times that when it really was a crisis situation, I kept thinking, I'm not right. That's not what this is. It can't be that bad. We'll just keep pushing through. So I tell you that story just so you know, it's common. It's very common when your children are not following the typical path for you to talk yourself out of the symptoms that they have. Well, we went on the asthma from that day on. I mean, the kid was ultra asthmatic. We would have to give him nebulizer treatments every 3 hours. Normally you give him every two, but he would need them every three. And literally, if he would cough in the middle of the night and I didn't get the nebulizer on his face by the second cough, we were going to the doctor. I mean, he was that asthmatic. His little lungs were just so asthmatic. Any cold turned into that. It was just crazy. I could hear him cough in my bedroom and be in his bedroom with the nebulizer on within a minute. It was like some army drill thing that I did. And since the nebulizer machine only worked, you know, he had to have it every 3 hours. Well, we lived in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I grew up in Akron, Ohio, so we would commonly drive back and forth, which was a 4-hour drive. So we had to stop halfway up to Akron and stay at like a Bob Evans and have lunch and run the nebulizer machine so that he could get his breathing treatment. And we did this for a couple of years. There are all kinds of pictures in the scrapbook of him just having these breathing treatments, reading a book, watching TV, playing with Play-Doh, because we were constantly having breathing treatments. To the point that he had 7 steroid treatments in 1 year. And I think the most you're supposed to have is 3. But what option do you have when your kid isn't breathing? I mean, you keep doing the breathing treatments. And by the time he was 2, he was on all 7 approved asthma drugs for him. So he had 2 different inhaled asthma drugs and 4 different pills and things that we used at different times to try to control his asthma. And it was getting worse and worse and worse. And now he was 2. And at that point, I found an alternative treatment for him that did work. And the thing that I'll say about that is I don't blog about all the alternative treatments that I've done with my kids, because there is no one alternative treatment that works for every child. You have to just try them. Like, if you're willing to do more than just what the medical society is telling you to do like the special diets and chiropractic treatments and different kinds of supplements and, you know, different things that are on the market, even through direct sales companies. The one that we found was through a direct sales company. which worked terrifically for our son and not at all for our daughter. None of these are tried and true, like will work for everybody. It's how your body will absorb them. So we found something for him that worked. A diet plus a supplement combination was able to get us down to just 2 to 3 drugs by the time he was 3. And now he really doesn't even have asthma at all, which is amazing. But the book that I read back in 2001, 2002 was written by Dr. Kenneth Bach, and it's called Healing the 4 A's. Allergies, asthma, autism, and ADHD. And back in 2000, when this book was written, if you took all of those diagnoses combined, so the allergies, asthma, autism, and ADHD, that hit 50% of all children in the U.S. So if you had 2 children standing in front of you in the U.S., one of those children would have the diagnosis of allergies, asthma, autism, or ADHD. And my children have been diagnosed with all of those things at one point or another. Now, another kind of funny story, or just how this kind of evolves, is when you have little kids like this, babies, toddlers, preschoolers, you as a mom kind of know that something's not right. Like, both of my kids ended up in speech therapy. Both of them ended up with IEPs. Both of them ended up with ear tubes. Like, I just kind of knew all along that there were some things that we were going to need. But even if you think your child's going to need an IEP when they're in grade school, you can't get that when they're 3. All you see are the symptoms that they have. So our son went to a Montessori school where they had the one-way mirror where you could watch him in the classroom, but if he looked at the window that you were looking through, he would just see a mirror. And there were only 12 kids in his kindergarten class with one teacher, so it was a great ratio. And they had a Montessori environment, but one day a week they would put him in this little tiny classroom where they would sit at these tables and they would do chalkboard work for like an hour or something just to prepare them for a traditional school someday. And we had been told that Joey needed vision therapy, which is an alternative therapy that is supposed to get your eyes in alignment. And both of my kids did it, and it did work with both of my kids. But at that time, it was on the list of the many millions of things that we could be spending our money on as alternative therapy was vision therapy. And it was in the back of my mind that I needed to go to this special doctor that was 2 hours away to see if he needed this vision therapy. And my husband and I were watching him in his kindergarten class behind this two-way mirror. And he was sitting, the chalkboard was maybe 4 to 5 feet in front of him. He was sitting at the very front table at the very first seat. He was closest that you could be to the chalkboard of the 12 children. And he took his little tiny chair and he walked up and he scooted up directly underneath the chalkboard so that, you know, his nose was basically touching the chalkboard, and then started to do his work. And I looked at my husband and I said, "That is not normal. There's something going on with his eyes." So we took him up to this special vision therapist 2 hours away. And I said, we think he needs vision therapy. We want him evaluated for that. But here's what happened at school, and maybe you want to check his regular eyesight too, which of course the ophthalmologist was going to do anyway. Why I thought I had to explain that, I don't know. But while they're doing that little test and figuring out, she's like, "Oh yeah, he's nearsighted and he's farsighted. As a matter of fact, he's almost blind. And if you hadn't caught this, he would have gone blind for sure in one eye and he might need surgery." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, are you kidding me?" So while we're having this conversation and trying to figure out, she's like, "Yes, he needs vision therapy and he needs glasses and he needs a patch and you need a specialist and all of this stuff." He had these little goggles on, you know, that big metal thing that comes in front of your face when you're having your eyes checked, and they put all the different lenses in front and you read the letters and numbers. Well, when you're really little, he was 5, they have you watch TV, and I don't know how they knew what he knew or not, but they could tell what his prescription was. And he had actually failed his vision screening 6 months prior, but he couldn't read. And in Montessori, they teach you the letter sounds by the sounds. So like, instead of saying an A is an A, you would say ah. Or instead of saying an M is an M, you'd say mm. And so when he went to have his 5-year-old well check, he failed his vision test. And the lady said he didn't name his letters correctly. And I said, "Well, he doesn't know his letters. Was he making sounds?" She said, "Yeah, he's making all kinds of sounds." I said, "Well, was he making the correct sound for the letter?" She's like, "I don't know. I didn't pay attention." So I discounted that failed vision screening because he didn't know his letters. Like, he couldn't possibly have passed it anyway. And I just thought, "Oh, you don't know. You didn't listen for the sounds. It's not top priority. I'm worried about asthma right now." So when we're with this doctor, she had adjusted those little glasses so that big metal thing that was like glasses for him, he was watching TV while we were talking. And she was saying, now, you know, when he gets these glasses, they're going to be a really high prescription and you're going to have to come up with some kind of a chart to make sure he wears them. And then she moved the glasses, the big metal thing, away from his face. And he just started bawling. He was like, I can't see. I can't see the whole way home. I can't see. I can't see. I can't see. Because he didn't know up until that point that he couldn't see. And for 2 weeks straight, you know, Lens Crafters makes your glasses in about an hour. Not these glasses. They took 2 weeks. Every day when he woke up, when he got home from school, are my glasses here yet? When do I get my glasses? When do I get my glasses? And I thought, I am never going to have to remind this kid to wear his glasses ever. The day we got the glasses, he has worn the glasses nonstop until last year. You know, now he's cool. But he has worn them nonstop. He has slept in them. He has never broken them. He has never lost them. That boy was so happy to be able to see. Well, around the same time, Joey's 5, Abby's 4, a bunch of other things were happening medically, other diagnoses. Our children have multiple diagnoses, multiple doctors, multiple medications, IEPs, special schools, blah, 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 blah. And it was summer, I think it was August, and I lost it. There have been two times where I have what I would call had a nervous breakdown. Luckily for me, they only last about a couple of hours and I don't need any medical intervention, but it was a summer day and I freaked out. I completely lost my mind. Greg had to take the kids and I ended up going in my bedroom, which is what I've done both times, and just trying to process through what in the heck is going on in our life. And I thought, well, how many doctor and school appointments have you been to? Like, with these two kids that are 4 and 5 years old, how many have you been to in the last 12 months? And it was 110. I had been to 110, not like, you know, helping out at the school field trip type days, meetings where we were talking about my children's needs, their medical needs, diagnostic tests, blah, 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 110. That's every 2.5 days I was in some kind of meeting. And the other thing that I've learned over the last decade is that I've taken my children to the best schools, the best alternative therapists, the best doctors, the best of everything, which costs a fortune, but they have been with the best of the best of the best. And still, that doctor is only the best at what they know. They're only the best at making sure this child isn't going to go blind. And after we did the patch for, I can't remember how long, 6 months, 4, 9 months, plus the vision therapy, plus the glasses, his eyes are now, as of last year, we just got the diagnosis that he no longer has a lazy eye and his eyes will both remain strong through the rest of his life. But it took that whole 7 years to make sure that he was off of that. And that's just one of the things that he deals with. And I realized that even though we went to the best eye doctor specialist in Cincinnati that does all the surgeries on all the kids that need them, I am the case manager for my children. I then have to relate that information to the school and how does that play into his IEP and what about the asthma and how about the learning disabilities and all these other pieces that all the specialists that you go to know the best about their craft. But even if they know the best about their craft, they don't know your kid. So our daughter's on some medicines for mood. And whenever I talk to her doctor, who is a head specialist at Cincinnati Children's, and the questions I ask her, she says, Lisa, you ask us questions that we still have in the scientific investigative stages. Like, your questions are the ones that we're testing out through medicine right now. And the way that you understand how drugs interact together, most of the doctors here don't get. Like, I do research outside of the Cincinnati area and bring it back. And Cincinnati Children's is one of the top children's hospitals in the country. I think they're number two in the country, like as far as children's hospitals. We have amazing resources here. But there are a couple of drugs that my daughter has had, and she reacts opposite of what you would think. Like, there's this teeny tiny subset of people that will react opposite on a couple of these different drugs. And each time it happens, because I'm hypervigilant when we add new drugs, and I watch for symptoms. Symptoms are keys. And I'm constantly watching for symptoms. And when I go back to the doctor, I'll be like, look, this is how it works. Instead of ramping up, we have to ramp down on this one, or this one doesn't work at all. And the doctor finally said, you know what? Every time you find a drug that's like that, it's for this subset of people, these kids that have this certain diagnosis in addition to this other diagnosis, respond to these medicines the same way. Well, that's a great tip. Now, if we're going to have a new drug, I'm going to say, okay, how does this subset of people in your studies respond to that drug? Because that is how Abby is going to respond to that drug. Another cool thing they did down at Children's is they were able to do a cheek swab of her and find out that she's a fast metabolizer, which means, you know, if you're a fast or slow metabolizer, depends on how much medicine you would give and how often you give medicine. So if you're struggling with any medicines, that's a test that you might want to have run. All right, so I had that little mini breakdown, and then I went right back into mom mode. And around that same time, I heard about this study that was done in California, and it said 80% of the kids that were seeing a psychologist or a psychiatrist in the state of California were adopted. 80% of the kids seeing a psychologist or psychiatrist in the state of California were adopted. And the study was trying to see that if adopted kids actually need more services than children who are not adopted, or are adoptive parents more proactive at getting services than non-adoptive parents would be. And I thought I could see both sides to that because, you know, if I physically had a child, I would have been hypervigilant for asthma because it's very likely that with both Greg and I having asthma that the child would have asthma. And so that's something I would watch for. But like we have a neighbor friend who every one of their children learned to read at the age of 8. Like they couldn't read until the age of 8 and then boom, like they could read overnight. It was no big deal. So when her kids weren't reading at 6 and 7, she would just say to the school, there's no problem here. Everyone in our family learns to read at 8. And then when 8 years old would come around, every single one of them could read. Well, when you adopt children, you don't know that. So if your child's not reading at 5, and you don't know that the genetic history of that child would be that they, boom, would start reading at 8. Yeah, you're going to start the testing process at 5 because you want everything to be great for that kid. I also do think, though, that possibly there can be, you know, these children needing more services than others. So I constantly battle this feeling of if this child really needs a service, if I'm being you know, over exaggerating, if I'm being dramatic, if I'm being too perfectionistic, if my expectations are too high. And I still battle with this even today, but more and more I battle with it less and less. And the reason why is because almost everything my children are diagnosed with are things that you can't like identify just by looking at them, like, oh, they have a broken leg, or, oh, they have cancer, or, oh, they have Down syndrome, or, you know, these are all things that you can identify by looking at a child or through a, you know, a test that's conclusive, yes or no. But every single thing that my kids are diagnosed with, it's diagnosed through observation, through, you know, a long track record, through a compilation of symptoms all coming together equals this diagnosis versus that diagnosis. And you're constantly observing your kids, making notes, and figuring out what you're actually dealing with so you can get the best treatment, which sometimes is therapy, which sometimes is school settings, which sometimes is medication, and sometimes is you're just not going to change this. So what I want to give to you today is how to organize if you have a child that has any kind of extra need beyond what you figured was going to be the typical, which is almost every kid today. But if you are dealing with anything medical or educationally with your kids, here are some of the tips that I've used over the last decade that have really helped me get organized. First of all, I am a research fanatic. So when my kids were going through different symptoms, but we couldn't figure out what the true diagnoses were, I did a lot of online research and I printed out a lot of things and I made this whole 2-inch binder about everything that supplements do. And I divided it by the alphabet from A to Z. So if you wanted to know about zinc, I had printed out something like that under Z and I had biotin under B. So for example, probiotics are an excellent thing to give your kids because it helps the good flora in your gut grow so that it can fight off the bacteria and the yeast that is naturally in your gut and help your kid have a healthy immune system. My daughter cannot tolerate any kind of probiotic whatsoever. I've tried them all. They behaviorally make her bonkers. And so she cannot handle probiotics. But what I have found is that biotin, which is a B vitamin, is actually what probiotics use as food to grow. And biotin has probiotic components. And so Abby has been on biotin since she was 3. And if I don't give her biotin, I see a difference in her behavior and in her immune system. And she takes a lot of biotin, like I think 5,000 micrograms, which is really just 5 grams. Milligrams? I don't know. Something like that. Also, if your nails don't grow well or if your hair is falling out, biotin is the thing you should take to help grow hair and nails. And it also helps with the immune system. And it is the alternative source for probiotics. So as I was doing my research on things like biotin, every time I would find out more about biotin, I would write it down. And there are other things like 5-HTP is one that worked really well for my son. But you have to increase that one slowly. So you start at 50 milligrams or micrograms, whatever it is, and then go to 100, and then you go to 150, and then you stay there. And if you're going to go off of it, you slowly go off of it the same way. Well, we had this expensive testing done in Illinois on our kids, all this nutritional testing. And when we were out there, they asked what vitamins they were on. And I said he was on 5-HTP. And they were like, oh, take him off of that right away. And I was like, well, are you sure? Because, you know, through all of my observations and everything that I know, this is a drug that he really, you know, this is a supplement that he really needs. And they said, oh, no, not for what we think he has. He doesn't need it. And I was like, so you want me to go off cold turkey? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay. So again, I didn't feel right about it, but I thought, well, I mean, these are like world-renowned people in supplements and all this stuff. So I'll follow what they say. So I stopped giving it to them that night. 3 days later, they called me back, and it takes 2 weeks to get your results back from this place. And they said, put them back on the 5-HTP, put them back. And I said, do you have the results? They said, not enough to give you all the results, but put them back on that. And so there again, I had been able to figure out what supplement was best for him based on research, based on looking at symptoms, and based on this notebook that I had. I knew how to dose that supplement. I knew the side effects. I knew what it was good for and what it wasn't good for. And so I had an organized way to keep track of all of these notes that I was using when I was so heavily into using supplements to help my kids. Another binder that you'll want to have is a combined school and medical binder. I cannot tell you how many times I am at the psychiatrist or the doctor's office and they ask a question about school testing or school things, or I'm in an IEP meeting at school and they'll ask a question about a medically related thing like an IQ test or a hearing test or things like that. So if you have the kids' school, current school and medical paperwork in one binder and you take that one binder with you to all your meetings, you'll always have what you need. So for example, I was in an IEP meeting for my daughter and they had an IQ test result that did not match what we had had 3 years ago. And I said, well, 3 years ago, it was XYZ. And they said, oh, okay, well, get us that paperwork when you can. I went flip, flip, flip. Here it is. Well, the meeting went from a tone of, you know, Kurt, here's your kid's diagnosis and here's this and you don't know anything, to me saying, hey, that's not what we've seen before. It's dramatically different. And if you know anything, IQs don't change, especially not by 30 points. So when I said that it changed by 30 points, they were like, yeah, well, get us that information, because they were dismissing me as the crazy mom. But because I was able to pull that information out and put it on the table within 1 minute, the tone of that room changed 180 degrees. Now, all of a sudden, instead of trying to figure out how not to give my child services, they were throwing out questions like, has your child had seizures? This is not normal. We need to redo this test. Who did this test? How often was it done? Can we get it done at Children's? And everybody was extremely concerned and had changed their tone. So being able to give concrete information as opposed to just looking like the crazy mom really will help you and your children. The next thing I do is I highlight everything. Like when I get the EOB statements from the insurance company, I highlight the child's name, the date of service, and the amount. That way I can match it up to the bill that comes in much more easily. If you're going to need to make copies of IEPs and stuff like that, the highlighting generally doesn't come through on the copy anyway. So go ahead and highlight everything. Like every time I get an IEP or a medical test like that, I highlight the date that it was done. That way I can find real easily which one is most current. Then you should also take a look at the medical and tax deduction that's available from the IRS. Currently, it is 10% of your, I think it's your adjusted gross income, but it's in the blog post that I'll link on the blog site. So there is a complete list from the IRS. I think it's like 10 or 15 pages. It's really, really long, of all the things that qualify as a medical expense. Now, our kids have learning disabilities, so the school that they went to was a learning disability school, and that expense is tax deductible, as well as all of their doctor visits, therapy visits, prescriptions. And if you use supplements or alternative therapies for your children that are based on their medical diagnosis, all you have to do is go to your medical doctor and have them take a prescription pad and write on the prescription pad that they are prescribing that. Like, our daughter's psychiatrist prescribes B12 and melatonin, grapefruit seed extract, and biotin for her. And because she medically prescribes those, I don't have to get them through the pharmacy. I could, but I don't have to get them through the pharmacy. I can get them through Amazon or wherever. But that is still a medical deduction, because on a prescription pad, that doctor has said that these supplements are being used as medicine to treat this disease that this child has or diagnosis. Next would be, oh, okay, so that's 10% of your adjusted gross income. So let's say you make $100,000. Who wouldn't that be nice? And your medical expenses are $20,000. Then $10,000 of that $20,000 are considered a medical tax expense. I don't know. Look it up. It's well worth it. I have a blog post about it. We write off our medical every year because 50% of our take-home pay goes to bona fide medical expenses. All right, then you're going to need to organize these pills, these supplements, these powders, all these different things that you're giving to your kids. And if you're doing alternative therapy like I used to do, there are a lot of powders and pills and things that are given at different times of the day. And so I use a lot of pill organizers for my kids, but also when they had different kinds of powders, I would dose out for the week their powders. So let's say they take a quarter teaspoon of this powder in their orange juice. I would open up the pill dispenser and I put a quarter teaspoon in each one of those. That way in the morning, I could just open up the Monday pill dispenser and then pour that powder right into the orange juice. And for my kids, they always had multiple powders. So let's say they were taking a vitamin C powder plus this other powder plus this other powder. I could put all three powders in there and then just pour them into the drink. So that really saved a lot of time, because I still spend an hour a week just filling my kids' pill dispensers and reordering the pills that they're out of or supplements that they're out of every single week. So, and I'm very organized. So it used to be a lot longer than that. So find a way to make that easier for you. Also, you're going to want to keep an anecdotal calendar, especially if you're doing anything alternative related. So just get one of those $1 calendars and just make notes. This was a good day or this was a bad day. This is especially helpful if you're dealing with food sensitivities or food allergies, which I'm going to talk about in the next podcast. Now, you need to understand that when your children are 7 and under, it is really hard to find a diagnosis if it is not something you're trying to have diagnosed that is a medical test diagnosis. Like I said, if you have Down syndrome, if you have cancer, if you have a broken arm, it doesn't matter how old you are. You go into the doctor, you run a test, and yes or no, you have that. I mean, you either have the XY chromosome. I mean, you have or you don't have those diagnoses. But if you're looking at the diagnoses of ADHD, learning disabilities, mood disorders, autism, there's no checkbox, there's no blood test, there's no, oh, yes, you have this, and here's what we'll do for that. It's all about observing behavior, a prolonged amount of behavior in different settings. And it's also, and then once you get a diagnosis, let's say you get an ADHD diagnosis, well, there are like a bazillion different kinds of ADHD. I mean, you can have ADHD and they give you a stimulant and you're great at school and your behavior was never a problem at home. Or you can have ADHD to the point where you can't even function. You know, there's these continuums. All of these diagnoses have these continuums. So what I think was more beneficial for me than the actual diagnoses was documenting all of the symptoms and behaviors that my kids had. Because as your kids get older, these symptoms and these behaviors that they have start to separate out. When your kid is little, like between 2 and 3, and they have either bipolar or ADHD, it will look almost identical. And it's not until they're like 4 or 5 or 6 where you're able really to separate out and say, okay, this child is actually bipolar or this child is actually ADHD. Also, autism and learning disabilities can look similarly. Food sensitivities and ADHD can look similarly. So anytime you can write down your symptoms and the behaviors and keep a log of that, years later, I would look back on those logs that I had done when the kids were younger. And I'm not that detail oriented. So what would happen would be I would get fed up and totally overwhelmed and not know what was going on with my kids. And I would sit down for a couple of days and just make a list of everything they were doing that was, you know, that I wasn't able to discipline. I wasn't able to organize. I wasn't able to parent because of all these behaviors. And I would just make these lists of all these behaviors. The great thing about that was 6 months later, when I would get overwhelmed again and make the list, some things always ended up on every single list and some things went away. So number one, I saw that the kids outgrew some of the behaviors, which was really, really nice when your kids are just going crazy and you're going crazy and you're able to look back and say, oh, but these four things that they did 6 months ago, they don't do today. So we are making progress. And I'm a very positive person and I'm always trying to find the positive. And so I would just say, but honey, these four things they aren't doing anymore. And he's like, yeah, but look at the eight new things. I'm like, let's not worry about that right now. So keeping that symptom list. And as my daughter got older, one of her diagnoses was mood disorder not otherwise specified. NOS is not otherwise specified. And so mood is something that for her is really impacted by food, by seasons, by the change, the time change, when time change, that really affects her. And I was able finally, when she was around, I think, seven or eight, I was able to see that her behaviors would escalate as her mood declined. And then as her mood stabilized, the behaviors would go away. And so I had a list of 22 things that she would do. Like if her mood was totally stabilized, she wouldn't do any of these things. And one of the things that would always happen would be she would all of a sudden not be able to use the past tense of verbs correctly. Like her speech would change. And then she would start going goody, goody, goody all the time. She would have to have the light on at night. She would be sleeping on our floor. There was just a list of things that she would do. And I got to the point that when we got to like 20 out of 25 of these things, I mean, it was seriously bad. Maybe sometime I'll talk about that, but I doubt it. So these behaviors would tell me how unbalanced her mood was. And so when I had that list and took it to a psychiatrist at one point, that was awesome. Because then for the rest of our relationship, I could communicate with how many of the 25 behaviors we were seeing, which helped us see which medicines were working, which therapies we were doing were working, based on those 25 symptoms, which are not something that you would normally have in a textbook. All right, so that is the end of this episode of Organizing Life Stages and Unexpected Events. I hope that if you have kids that are younger, or even if your kids are grade school age or grandchildren, that this gives you a perspective of some of the things to look for. If you think there's something that's maybe needs attention in your children, and some concrete ways of organizing that information, advocating for that child, and really getting them the help that they need and getting you the help that you need also. You got to remember that mom and dad need help too in order to make it through this with raising your wonderful children. The divorce rate for children that have special needs is of the parents of children who have special needs is 85%. So typically, what ends up happening is these children who have extra needs, their parents also get divorced, and you end up with a lot of single moms with children who have extra needs. So if you do not have a child like this, and you are not spending every waking moment trying to figure out how to find money to help this child and trying to figure out what this child needs help with, it'd be awesome if you could reach out to some of those single parents around you that are struggling to provide for their kids physically, emotionally, mentally, and financially. So next time, we're also going to be talking about an unexpected event. And for us, that was food sensitivities. This is a story that I don't think I've told fully on the blog. I know I haven't told fully on the blog, and I know it is a big reason why I have such a hard time feeding our family because of what we went through with food sensitivities. So if you have any food allergies or food sensitivities, you're going to want to check back in for that episode in a couple of weeks. Have a great week. I hope you got some good nuggets of information on how to get organized in today's podcast. come on over to organize365.com to check out all the resources and links in today's show.